Can't you see it? The world powered by solar and renewable energy. Here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Hey guys, it's Jim Costa from Cash the Ticket. If you're betting the NFL playoffs, you need to be listening to Cash the Ticket. We're breaking down every single game, totals and sides, all the way to the big game. Subscribe to Cash the Ticket on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
I suppose turnabout is fair play. And after I asked you a burning question regarding a 100-meter race between the fastest NFL player and the fastest man at the Olympics. Now that you've been answering, still 40 minutes to go in our poll, by the way, and I'm pretty pleased with the response. It's been a while since we've done a poll. It's been a while since we've had a poll that's been this popular. So if you would like to take the poll, by the way, that's a line from Wicked, the Broadway show. Every time I use the word popular, I hear in the back of my head the Good Witch singing her version of popular. She does it a lot better than I do, but it was, who's the Broadway singer who started out? It's Wicked's been on Broadway now for 15 years. If you ever make it to New York, or if you have the chance to see Wicked off Broadway, I highly recommend it. It is brilliant. You don't even have to love The Wizard of Oz, though that's a classic, to appreciate it. Kristen Chenoweth, she's the original, and she was along with Idina Menzel. Yes. Those were the original two in Wicked, the two witches. And the show is so good. The music's brilliant. The soundtrack has sold hundreds and hundreds of thousands of copies. And so it's a great show. I do recommend it. People ask me all the time about different activities or sites to engage in, to see in New York. And I always recommend the 9/11 Memorial as well as the museum. The museum is worth going through. Take a couple hours. I just took my mother-in-law and my husband there for the first time in June. It is worth it. It's powerful, even beyond the memorial with the pools in the place of the two footprints of the buildings. So I highly recommend that you go visit the 9/11 Memorial and Museum. And yes, Statue of Liberty, Central Park, Times Square, which I can only stomach now for maybe 5 minutes at a time. But I also really recommend seeing Wicked on Broadway. Anyway, popular. So it's a popular poll, and it's still going for another 40 minutes. If you'd like to weigh in at A-Law Radio or on our show Twix at Amy After Hours. While you're there, though, because what's good for the goose is good for the gander. I love that phrase. It's so old, as in old, old, like something my grandmother would say, but it still rings true. What's good for the goose is good for the gander. Anyway, you can find the bright orange box, the goose and gander box, on both of our social media sites and send your questions for Ask Amy Anything. And it's about 90 minutes from now. Ryan will rack up those questions and we'll get as many answered as popular. No, now it's stuck in my head. As possible, not popular. Although it is popular, it's been running now for the last 11 years. It's the longest running feature on our entire show and really the only one that survived through all of these various producer auditions / fill-in spots. A lot of the features have gone away this summer, which has been hard for me because I do like to have the bells and whistles and some of the fun stuff. And we've got signature features like QB News and a few others. It's been trimmed down. It's been pared down a bit this summer, trying to make sure we're technically sound and that I can concentrate on content, even as I'm picking up extra responsibilities. But Ryan does a good job with social media and also does a great job on the board. So maybe, just maybe, we can throw another feature out there, like a QB News at some point later in the rest of the show. 855-212-4227. Our friend Dan, our friend, using my air quotations, from San Diego has written to profusely apologize on Twix. So, Dan, I accept your apology, I'm going to have to be a little careful about who I trust in the future. And when you call me up and say, this is the fifth time we've spoken, I'm going to know right away that our last phone call went horribly off the rails. And I'm going to be very careful, very careful. You're going to have to tread lightly. Another friend of the show, an actual friend of the show, his name is Matthew Keys, and he's joined us in the past to talk tech and media. So he's an insider when it comes to these things, and he's in the Bay Area. He writes to be snarky, remind me not to ask you about the Padres. All right. I see how you are. Is that how it's going to be now? The question about the Padres is not the issue. I'm happy to talk about any team that you would like to talk about, but that's the point. I can, because I do pay attention and I do watch. You could say a lot of things about me. You don't like my voice. People give me that all the time. Although I get just as many who say they do, is what I say about my voice. It is extremely unique. There is no other female. In fact, I sound more like a male half the time, especially when I'm sick. Oh, dear. I sound like a male lounge singer when I'm sick. There's no other voice out there like it, which is good. To be different is a wonderful thing. But I get people who say, I don't like your voice. You laugh too much. You, I don't know, just all kinds of things that people say about me. You're this, you're that. Some guy asked me if I was drunk last night because that's a legit question. And so it doesn't matter what you say about me. I couldn't care less, really. But no one has ever said to me that I'm not prepared and that I don't do my homework. So that's insulting, Dan. But I guess we're going to move past it. We're going to move past it. I'm going to be taking the high road here, and I am going to accept your apology. What do you think? What do you think, Ryan? Did I make my point clear that you can insult me and you can disagree with my opinions, but you cannot ask me whether or not I've done my homework? I think we've gotten that across.
Got that.
All right.
I feel like Dan needs to, like, give a speech.
A speech of apology.
The Padres will never win.
Padres won't win until you, Dan, have taken ownership for insulting the national radio host.
They'll go out and lose the next 8 series instead of winning the last 8.
See? Even Ryan has done his homework about the Padres, and he's not even on the show all the time. We do our homework around here at A-Law Radio, and then our Facebook page. I'll send your questions for Ask Amy Anything. And yes, we're going to get to a little more baseball. Juan Soto with a 3-home-run game. And actually, I was surprised about where it falls in Yankee history. The Houston Astros, they are the team on the longest win streak right now with 7 in a row. So I know that makes the rest of the American League fans extremely giddy because you know how much you love the Astros. Oh my gosh, kind of funny. My husband, as I mentioned, is an Astros fan and proudly wore his Astros hat and cheered like it's the best game he'd ever been to on Saturday when we went to Fenway Park and the Astros clubbed 4 home runs and held off the Red Sox at the end. So Sean Grandy, whose tickets I purchased, voice of the Boston Celtics, he sent me a text a few hours ago saying, oh, I just remembered your husband is an Astros fan. I guess that must have been fun. Right. I'm going to send him back a photo that I took of my husband cheering again, like standing up, standing ovation, Yordan Alvarez, best player he's ever seen. I feel like he was trying to make a point. He really enjoyed being the one guy in our section who was cheering for the Astros. So I would have really rubbed it in if the Sox had managed to pull off the comeback and walked off in the 9th inning or forced extra innings. They had the tying run on second base. This is after they were no hit into the 5th inning. So yeah, it was an exciting game. It had a little bit of everything. Yes, yes, Astros fans, you have a lot to crow about right now, and my husband is with you. And we'll talk a little more about what's happening in the National League as well. It's kind of fun to see some of these races develop, even though we've got roughly 6 weeks to go in the regular season. So it's still dog days. And I told you this was going to happen with the Olympics exiting stage left. And yes, there's some fallout. I think people are still really excited about the last couple weeks. Some of the numbers that are coming out of the Olympics, unique numbers that indicate how much people invested in these games, worth every penny that NBC paid for them, without a doubt. So we'll maybe work in some of those. I know it's still tough to think about the Jordan Chiles situation. It's tough to explain it, but it's also tough to think about her emotions, even as she's taken a break from social media for obvious reasons. But in that void, here comes the NFL. And it's all gas, no brakes, as I said earlier, like we are in the show. It's crazy. Now, all of a sudden, the floodgates have opened, and it's nonstop. And yes, the Brandon Ayuk trade is a major question mark. I tend to agree with our guest, Joe, who joined us right before the top of the hour from Pittsburgh. He said the longer it goes on, the more it feels like he's going to end up staying with the Niners. But if this is a ploy by his camp to get more money out of San Francisco, to get a contract that maybe has a few extra million dollars in it, well, it seems to be working because he's got everybody waiting with bated breath. We've also got the CeeDee Lamb situation and Micah Parsons talking about his holdout and about him not being with the Cowboys. And then what about Hassan Reddick? We know we got the statement from Jets management saying hell to the gnaw. I'm paraphrasing here, that he's not getting traded. Well, now you've got Aaron Rodgers talking about it. Now you've got Robert Saleh talking about it. And so, yeah, this tends to happen every offseason into the preseason. Last year, the last two big names were Chris Jones, who got his contract, I think, before week two. So he was with the Chiefs right after they kicked off the season opener. And then the Jonathan Taylor. Now, he wasn't completely healthy, but he did sign, I think, after 1 month had passed in the regular season. Took him a while to get back up to speed. Generally, these things work themselves out as we get closer to kickoff and as we get closer to deadline. So at this point, it's much more of a waiting game than anything. But don't forget, it can also be used as a bargaining tool or as a bargaining chip for some of these guys. And I like to describe it as a very high price game of chicken. Who's without the crash in the middle, we hope. Who's going to blink first? Who's going to cave and say, fine, I'll give you what you want? So it's happening again in this offseason. The NFL owners, they make money hand over fist. I do not begrudge these players the opportunities in what are very short career windows. The average NFL career does not even last 5 years. And so the idea, the opportunity, the chance to sign a huge contract maybe comes around once for these guys. You want to make sure you get the guaranteed money because there isn't a lot of job security, right? A lot of these contracts are structured in a way that teams can get out of them after, say, 2 years. There's not guaranteed money after the fact. And teams have most of the leverage. I don't begrudge these guys the opportunity to wait, to bet on themselves, so to speak, and to try to get a big deal. Now, I think it's foolish if you're in your rookie contract and you're going into, say, your fourth year or your fifth year, and you're forfeiting what is the largest payday so far in the NFL in order to hold out and try to get a deal. So I'm not a huge fan of that. At the same time, all the contracts that we're talking about, well, with CeeDee Lamb for sure, Brandon Ayuk, both those guys are worth it to their two franchises. And in the case of Hassan Reddick, he hasn't been with the Jets a long time, but for both parties, I think it behooves them to get it settled because Reddick would like to be part of a team that is extremely talented if they do have the head of the snake this year in Aaron Rodgers and a team that's built around him. There's a very real chance that they could be a playoff team this season and maybe, just maybe make some noise. They have a lot of talent on their roster. What they need is some experience. What they need is the leadership and the forward momentum and the chance to work out all the kinks. So in each of these cases, there's some major incentive for both sides, I believe. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence, 855-212-4227. Bad news coming from the NFC North, especially if you're a Vikings fan. Kevin O'Connell gives the latest update on his rookie quarterback that we knew was dealing with some knee soreness after last weekend's preseason game.
It has been determined that JJ does have a tear in his meniscus, you know, in his right knee. He will need to undergo a procedure that, you know, obviously that will hopefully take place, you know, in the near future here. Don't have a timeline on that, but as far as the timeline of the injury, that will be something determined during the procedure based upon, you know, whether it can just be a cleanup or potentially a repair. That won't be able to be determined until that procedure takes place. So I really, you know, would just be speculating on a timeline for a return at this point.
Right. So the doctors have to get in and see what they see. If it's a tear, if it has to be repaired, if it has to be completely redone, or if it's potential that they could just fix it while they're in there without having to completely rebuild that ligament. Well, that's better news. But they won't know until they actually get into his knee and find out. But this sucks. Not so much because we expected J.J. McCarthy to be starting week number one. I don't believe that he would have been ready, but because it stunts his development, right? Because it sets him back. Now, J.J. has already shown that he, as a rookie quarterback, and I say this about most rookies, that he was going to be a wild ride. Even in the preseason game, kind of stunk it up in the second quarter. But then as he's working his way through the third quarter and he's on that snap count, right, he was only going to take 30 snaps. He ends up throwing two touchdown passes in the third quarter. And what they really liked is how he came back and rallied after a poor first half. Unfortunately, now he's injured, and so that all stops. And it will be Sam Darnold who takes over as their starting quarterback. Maybe, just maybe, this is a new lease on life for Sam Darnold. We've seen a bunch of him with the Jets, then with the Panthers. Shoot, I forgot where he was last year.
San Francisco.
That's right. He was with San Francisco. He was with the Niners, and generally with Sam, there seems to be a ceiling. Now, these guys are all smart. They're in a class in and of themselves. To make fun or to trash a backup quarterback to me it's ridiculous. These guys are in the NFL for a reason. But there were only so many elite quarterbacks, and Sam is not one of them. At the same time, while JJ may not be psyched about having a potential revolving door at quarterback, and it can be a tough thing on your wide receiver room, I don't know how many expectations there were for the Vikings in 2024 anyway. I'm not sure how much solace that is. The idea was to try to use this season rebuilding, changing a few pieces, finding the right quarterback, regrouping, if you will. Again, the big deal is just that JJ will not be able to continue on and learn how to be an NFL QB and get more mature and get the reps until he's healthy again. So for now, it's Sam keeping the seat warm.
You know, Sam's had a really good camp, and my confidence level in Sam is very, very high at this point, and looking forward to seeing him continue his progression that we've had for him throughout the early part of camp into that first preseason game.
What else is he going to say? Maybe.
Help.
Maybe the Vikings keep it simple, stupid. Just put the ball somewhere that Justin Jefferson can grab it. Now, Darnold only signed a one-year deal. So this is what I mean about keeping the seat warm. It's worth a pretty penny, $10 million. But now he's going to be the starter. And there is a ceiling, as I say. There's not much of a chance that Darnold's going to lead them to the Super Bowl. But that's not just about Darnold. It's about the rest of the team as well. So I don't want to put this just on Sam's shoulders. We know what Sam is. And I hope that he can be turnover free. I hope that maybe free of pressure and expectations in Minnesota, we can see him find his stride. The idea, though, is that J.J. McCarthy gets healthy, gets back to taking some reps, and at some point, maybe, they're able to use him as the starting QB. But I'm glad that Sam has embraced the new opportunity and that he's looked sharper as camp has gone on. My confidence level in Sam is very, very high. That's a direct quote from Kevin O'Connell. At A-Law Radio or at Amy After Hours, plus our Facebook page, send your questions for Ask Amy Anything about an hour and 20 minutes from now, and make it interesting for one Ryan who has done this before. This will be your second time, third time?
Third.
All right. So he's finding his rhythm as well. He's not even a J.J. McCarthy anymore. He does not need knee surgery. So we'll also get to some of your calls, 855-212-4227. Good to have you with us. It's the Hump Show, middle show of the work week. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
You are listening to the After Hours podcast. This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Do you have questions? You almost always have questions. Well, this is your night. It's the Hump Show, middle show of the work week, which means you can ask Amy anything. So find us online at Amy After Hours. Also on our Facebook page, if you address Ryan personally, maybe he's more likely to choose your question. Preguntas, muchas preguntas. 855-212-4227. It's 855-212-4227. Johnny is in Pittsburgh. Johnny, welcome to the show.
Amy, long time. And I've been able to say this. I call a lot of sports talk radio. First time, long time.
Awesome.
Love your show. I'm actually heading out to see my favorite band. And I got a 6-hour drive ahead of me, and I caught the tail end of your conversation. I have a question for you.
Yes.
And it got me thinking, right? I'm a diehard Bills fan, OG Bills Mafia, living in Pittsburgh the last 10 years. How much more? It used to be, it's like you were talking about punters if you were talking about backup quarterbacks, right? How relevant is the backup quarterback position now more than ever with 3 preseason games, no sparring, no hitting, you know, turf toe, you know, $50 million contracts, keeping these guys on ice? And I want to ask you, who are the top backup quarterbacks in this league? And I would love to hear this from you and your staff. At what rate last year or the last couple of years did a backup quarterback come into play for these NFL franchises? And, you know, you look at like Fitzy, Tyrod Taylor. I mean, there's a bunch of them over the years that have become, like you said, there's no disrespect, right, in this NFL. If you can be a backup quarterback, you can make a damn good living. So,
yes.
And I am curious. I mean, honestly, like, at what rate are these guys going to get burned? I mean, at what rate are we going to see backups? And where do you see the most relevant backup quarterbacks in this league going into this season? Appreciate you.
Sure, I appreciate the question, Johnny. So last year, we had 66 different starting quarterbacks in the NFL. So you want to know about how relevant backup QBs are? That's how relevant. We even had one guy, and this was, Josh Dobbs, who started for 2 different teams in the NFL last season. Yeah, quarterbacks are not only at a premium, the elite ones come at a premium, but we know that it's not impossible, but it's a huge challenge to get through an entire season with just one quarterback. I had said this going into the 23 season. If the Niners only have Brock Purdy all season long, that in and of itself makes them leaps and bounds ahead of where they'd been for the entire Kyle Shanahan tenure. If they can get through an entire season with one quarterback, think about the revolving doors in places, well, in San Francisco actually too, until they found Brock Purdy. But Indianapolis, Carolina, Miami, until they got to Tua, Denver now since Peyton Manning retired, Las Vegas / Oakland, going back to Derek Carr was their starter for a lot of years, but then that got ripped up. Think about the Saints post Drew Brees and what they're doing now, trying to find another quarterback. The Patriots after Tom Brady retired. The Pittsburgh Steelers, another example. Every team has to go through it eventually, but the teams that can avoid the revolving door at quarterback for long stretches of time, those are the ones that generally are the best in the NFL. So, yes, 66 different starting quarterbacks in 2023. Lots of injuries. I say this, it's either injury or ineptitude. The pressure that is put on rookie quarterbacks, especially when they're drafted high by bad teams, those are the ones that need the experienced backups. Tennessee now going through a search for a new quarterback, though they believe that Will Levis is their guy. I mean, the Washington Commanders situation, oh my gosh, it goes back to before they were actually the Commanders. The number of starting quarterbacks that they have used. The Cleveland Browns, I know they paid Deshaun Watson all this guaranteed money, but how reliable has he been? Last year they had five different starting quarterbacks, somehow still made the playoffs. Imagine what it would have been had they been able to rely on just Deshaun or just one QB. So, constant change at your quarterback position generally equals constant losing, which is why teams are so willing to pay premium $55 million per year now when they finally have a quarterback that they believe is elite and brings stability and fits their system. But the teams that have the greatest need for starting or for backup quarterbacks, for quality backup quarterbacks, to me, those are the teams that have the rookies. Yes, you're hoping that these rookies make great strides, that they get on the field, they manage to protect themselves, they play smart, they avoid the biggest collisions, they get rid of the ball when they need to, they can protect themselves, but also they have an offensive line that can protect them. But that's not always the case when it comes to rookies who get drafted high and then go to bad teams, right? So backup quarterbacks, I think, are so critical when you're talking about a rookie QB. Also, backup QBs are important when you don't know who your starting quarterback is going to be. Think about Pittsburgh last year, and this is part of what I talked about with Joe, is they just kept trying something, anything, to see what might work. And yeah, toward the end, shoot, not Mason Rudolph. Who is the quarterback who came in at the end that played really well for them? Why is his name escaping me? He'd been with the team for a few years. But it was their third different starting quarterback? Shoot, someone's yelling at me in Pittsburgh right now. People are yelling at me in Pittsburgh. I'm going to have to go back and look. He's not with them anymore, obviously. But for the teams that aren't sure, right, that those are the teams that also desperately need to have a quality quality backup, because they don't know who might provide consistency. They don't know who's going to have great leadership. It was Mason Rudolph. Oh, my gosh. I'm an idiot. Yes, they started out with Kenny Pickett. Then they went to Mitch Trubisky. Finally finished with Mason Rudolph. My fault about that. Always go with your first answer. Mason was the name that popped into my head. So, yeah, in both cases, when you have a rookie quarterback and you're bringing him along and he needs someone who can show him the ropes, who can be in that quarterback room with him, who can help him to understand and pick up speed on the playbook and the terminology and the defenses and the schemes he's going to see. But not just that, the speed of the game. It's such a drastic change from college, even at the highest of heights in college, to the NFL. And then in those situations, like we just talked about with Pittsburgh, right now Mike Tomlin is going all in with Russell Wilson. But they do want to know what they have with Justin Fields. And because Russ has had a bit of a mixed bag over his last 5 years, what if he can't get back to the point where he is consistently driving a team downfield, making smart decisions, not turning the ball over? I know we saw some of those flashes in that last year or second year with Denver, but not enough for Sean Payton, right? That's not what he wanted. And so Russ on the move again. There's such a value in having a quality backup that keeps his head down, does his work, is content to hold the clipboard, but is ready when he's called on. How often do we have backup quarterbacks who are not ready when their number is called? And again, I'll end with this. Thank you so much for your phone call. I can get down this rabbit hole so easily. The best starting quarterbacks you hope that they are always on the field, right? You hope that they never have to deal with an injury that takes them out for a long stretch. But think about it, Jake Browning last season. When his number was called, when Joe Burrow got injured again, he was ready to go. And the team, while they certainly missed Joe's talents and skills and abilities, they weren't missing anything in terms of Jake's ability to step on the field, know the offense, know what he was looking for. That's huge. A starting quarterback, if he can be out there 17 games, that's optimal. But most of the time, that's not the case. Two-thirds of the NFL uses multiple quarterbacks every year. So a backup QB who's prepared, who does his work, who prepares and understands that he is one snap away from becoming the starter. Those are the most valuable backup QBs. I know that was a long answer, but I get very passionate about this thing. At A-Law Radio is where you can find me. A couple minutes left. Our friend Dan in San Diego, he's apologizing again. Like, I'm really sorry. I'm really, really sorry. 5 minutes left in our poll, so get there. And also your opportunity to send questions for Ask Amy. Do a little baseball coming up next, and then back to football at the top of the hour. I like this. It's a 1-2 punch. Bring it. Let's go. It's our hump show. Here's our latest sports update.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
Two twos. We get a fly ball right field. This one's deep. Going back. Haniger looking up. And it's gone. Grand slam for Jake Rogers. Oh, man. What a night. 11-1 Tigers in the fourth. Line drive to the gap in deep left center. Have a night, Jake Rogers. Meadows will score. Rogers is going to round second. He's heading to third. Throw. Got him.
he tried to leg it out.
Jake Rogers like, I'm going for three.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Have a night, Jake Rogers. Not something I've said or even heard until this point in the Major League Baseball season. But we kind of feel like if you have a grand slam and an RBI double twice in the same game and you rack up 7 runs batted in, well, then you deserve to be featured on After Hours with Amy Lawrence. So for Jake Rogers, I would say one of the highlights of the Tigers season. Also the fact that they were able to do it against a contender, taking on Seattle, and Tarek Skubal coming away with his major league leading 14th win. They had the offense, they had the pitching, they had everything that they needed, and it was a season high in runs for the Tigers, and also the most hits they've had all year, 21. All right, showing a little bit of heat here. They've racked up a couple of wins. The last week has been impressive for them. I don't know if that means anything. The American League's pretty stacked. But you never know because of the extra wild cards and the fact that Major League Baseball even wants to expand and add more wild cards, would like to add another one in each of the leagues. Oi, wait, that was a bad face palm. Hold on. There we go. Face palm. It's a face palm type of a moment for Major League Baseball. They are always tinkering. Rob Manfred never is content or happy with what he's got. And it's usually a money grab when we're talking about expanding playoffs because these leagues make money on the postseason TV broadcasts. And that's how they can set the market for advertising and corporate partners. So yes, it's all about expanding the footprint on TV for the postseason. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Yay for the Tigers, but that's not the top of the American League. Instead, we've got a pretty healthy battle that's taking place in the American League East. I hope it goes all the way through the end of this 2024 campaign. And dare say that the dog days of summer, perfect time for Juan Soto to do something that is rarely done.
One-on-one out, 1-1. Soto drives it. Left field, it's deep. Benintendi back on the run at the wall. Gone. Goodbye for Juan Soto. number 31, a two-run smash, and the Yankees have a 2-0 lead. The 3-1, Soto drives another, deep left center field, way back and gone, goodbye. Second tonight for Juan. Number 32. Oh, it's a Soto show in Chicago, and the Yankees have a 3-0 lead. Here's a 3-2. Soto drives another.
Oh,
deep right field. Way back and gone. Goodbye. A three-homer night for Juan Soto. Oh, he's sensational.
Juan Soto. First time for him with three home runs in the same game. Emmanuel Babari, and you hear Susan Waldman in the background. Talk about having to deal with a revolving door of quarterbacks. The Yankees are moving different play-by-play announcers in and out, and Susan Waldman is the constant.
God!
If she can handle Craig Carton and his exulting and his deep, deep homer calls, well, then she is even more of a pro than many people give her credit for.
Yahtzee!
At one point, Craig Carton, who now hosts a morning show on FS1, called Juan Soto Luis Soho, who's a former Yankee, hasn't played in pinstripes for quite a long time. Now, here's something that surprised me, actually. Juan Soto's three home run game in a Yankee uniform is only the 37th time it's happened in their franchise history. They're called the Bronx Bombers or the Baby Bombers, or come up with some other B word that's an alliteration, goes along with Bombers. This team is known for hitting home runs. That is one of the franchise hallmarks. And it's only the 37th time in their storied history that they've had a dude club three in the same game. Well, it came at the right time. As I say, Yankees and Orioles battling for first place in the AL East, but also Yankees and Guardians battling for best record in the American League.
All three of them were you know, pretty impressive. You know, the other way, no doubters the other way. The second one, a line drive, probably 20 rows up in left center. Not a lot of lefties doing that. And then, you know, left on left, tried to sneak the high one past him, and he left no doubt about it. So just a great night by a great player. I feel like in watching Juan, I'm watching one of the best seasons I've ever seen, too. And then I get to watch Aaron right behind him. So try not to take for granted or try to appreciate what you're seeing with both of those guys, because I don't know if it's overshadowing or not. I just know that is one tough at bat every single day.
True. All of that is true. But how often over the last, say, 2 months, it seems like the Yankees have found their mojo again, but for a month and a half, only Aaron Judge was hitting, and there really wasn't a lot of support for him at all. But yes, congratulations. Big piece of Yankee history for Juan Soto. And actually, he says he was looking for four home runs. He wasn't happy with just the three.
I don't know. I was ready. I was just more ready to add a couple more runs to the team, try to help the team to get an easy win today. But it didn't happen, and thanks to the bullpen, it came out strong today.
But we talked about Aaron Rodgers. We talked about Aaron Judge and the fact that he's a Triple Crown candidate, second in the AL in batting average, leads the majors in both home runs and RBI. Well, Soto is also hitting above 300, and he's at 33 dingers. So for context, Judge has 42. Shohei Ohtani has hit 36 and 37 now to start this week. A couple of guys there with 36, 35, and Soto is kind of lurking there with 33, and himself is in the top 10 in terms of runs batted in, is now getting close to that century mark. So they do have two of the most prolific hitters in that lineup in 2024. And right now, they are tied with the Guardians for most wins in baseball, along with the Dodgers. So you've got two in the American League, one in the National League, sitting on 71 wins. But right now, Guardians have one less loss, as do the Dodgers, right? So they both have records of 71 and 49. And it's not even the stretch run yet. Why am I getting so deep into all these baseball numbers? It's because I'm a total and utter nerd. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Let's see if we can work on a quick call. Jason in Massachusetts, welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you for taking my call, miss.
Sure.
Yeah, I just want to talk about the Red Sox, if that's all right, because
mm-hmm.
I went to the game tonight. I watched a lot of the games.
Nice.
And some AL East, I guess. I mean, the Yankees are a team to watch. I think Baltimore, once October comes, no matter who they play, will collapse.
Why?
I just don't think they got it. I just don't think they got it because I really think like the Yankees have guys that can hit home runs, and the Red Sox have grit. Yeah, Baltimore's got some young players or whatever, but I don't know, the grit and the hustle and the heart, not something that you can define on a statistic sheet or something. And the Red Sox, I don't think they played the best game tonight. I kind of want to talk about that real quick.
But, okay, quick. We got about a minute to go.
They put hustle in and stuff like that usually. They've got a guy that's suspended, and I think that's going to be a curveball that they haven't faced yet. Like, however they handle this situation, the guy coming back, the crowd reaction, I think that's going to make or break this team. So, like, you know, 6 to 12 games, we'll see how the team goes. There's 6 weeks left in this season, and I think it's going to be a Red Sox-Cardinals year. I think the Cardinals can overtake the Brewers, too, and I think that's the biggest threat to the Dodgers.
All right, well, let me respond. Yes, thank you, Jason. Good to hear from you, Massachusetts. You're referring to Jaron Duran, who got suspended 2 games for using the gay slur that got caught on camera. Honestly, as much as it was offensive to people, I don't think that's going to impact the team. He's been a great resource for them. He's been a great catalyst for them this season. I think that most guys are willing to forgive and get back to business. I do think the Red Sox have heart and grit. I think Alex Cora sets a great tone, but I think you're wrong about the Orioles. The Orioles are a little more battle-tested after last season. Those young guys getting a taste of playoff experience, I think they're better than you might believe. Plus, their pitching is pretty good. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence.